Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to episode 218 with Atlanta actor Eric James Morris. But first, a bit about our sponsor. This episode of Yes But Why podcast is sponsored by Audible. You can get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. In my conversation with Eric, he mentions that he did Johnny Cash covers when he performed music in restaurants for a while. So I looked up Johnny Cash, and there are a lot of cool-looking biographies. And also a recording of Johnny Cash himself reading the entirety of the New Testament. Wow. Things you don't expect to find, but they're here on Audible. Audible is available for your iPhone, Android, or Kindle. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. In this week's Yes But Why episode, we talk to Atlanta actor Eric James Morris. Eric has been playing guitar since he was 12 years old, and he tells me the story of his first performance. Years later, after getting married and having kids, Eric got into acting for film and television, and now that is the creative path to which he is currently dedicated. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 218. Eric James Morris on having the grit and dedication to maintain a career in entertainment. Enjoy!
I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah!
The first time that I had the taste of entertainment, I was maybe 13 years old, and I've always been a musician. Okay, I started playing guitar when I was about 12. I had a stepbrother that was much older than me for a little while, and they were into playing guitar, and I picked it up, and I've always had a thing for it. I used to just play it all the time, and so there was a talent show at our junior high school, and I decided to get in. And I mean, another guy was going to get up there and do a song together. He chickened out last minute. I was going to go solo. And then some other guys had the idea they were going to do a little band piece. And I've never, didn't really know these guys. Well, I knew one of them, but the other two I didn't really know. And I didn't realize that these guys have never played an instrument in their lives, but they were ready to get up there and rock. And so I just assumed they knew how to play. You know, we were going to play a song called by George Thorogood, Bad to the Bone. That was the plan.
Yeah.
And so the curtain opens, the guy tries to hit the drums, and he can't keep a time to save his life. And the other guy didn't know how to play the song, and I started playing it. And the guy tried to sing, and it just was like, it was a disaster. They were closing their curtains on us. So I was like, what the world? So I said, well, wait. And I knew the sound guy. He was a friend of mine, and his name was Dale. And I said, wait, Dale, hang on, man. Turn it back up. And so he did. And then I got my guitar, and I went up to the microphone, and the whole school, they're all, everybody's looking at me, and I didn't say anything, and I was like, well, I'm doing the song called A Wild Thing. So I just looked out, and then I opened up with I started playing the song, and I sang it, and everybody was laughed at first, but then they were like, they were all smiling, and then I did the whole song and sang it, and from then on out, everybody started calling my nickname was Wild Thing.
And no way. That's crazy. Really?
I know. Girls loved it, man.
That is so funny.
Boosted my whatever you want to call it. It was kind of cool. And from that moment on, I just kind of fell in love with it. And I always had a thing for that. I mean, my goal was to be a, I know it's hard to believe it when you look at my photos or hear me talk, but my goals were to be maybe a punk rock star or something like that. I was a big skateboarder too. And so it went hand in hand, and that was my thing. And I was really good guitarist. It wasn't the best at singing. I mean, cause I just didn't really pursue that a lot, but I could sing a little, you know, but I wasn't I have this deep voice, so it has to, you know, I'm not in everybody's range, if you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
And so
punk rock, you don't have to sound like anything. You could just talk into the microphone and it's super punk rock.
Yeah. You know, I could pull off some Misfits songs, you know, stuff like that, but, definitely no Megadeth or anybody that's singing really.
No.
So, anyways, I had a little band, and you know, we played, and I made a lot of bad choices. I mean, I just had a bad upbringing, several stepdads, and you know, there was drugs and stuff like that involved. But I managed to walk a pretty clean line considering where I was at and how I got there. And
is that high school?
Yeah, and then you know, high school wasn't top priority. Skateboarding was really, and
yeah. Where did you grow up?
Mainly, well, Atlanta Metro. I mean, we moved around.
Oh, okay.
We lived on the south side of Atlanta, which Clayton County. You know, it's not known as one of the best areas, I guess. But Forest Park is where I was at, and then we moved out west of Atlanta and over in Cobb County, and then eventually made our way to Douglas County, which was further west. My mom got remarried a few times along the way, and you know, just tough, man. I was just a punk. I don't know what else to say. My goal was to move to Venice Beach. And,
what was your goal to move to?
Venice Beach in California, and take up surfing and be some kind of professional punk rock guy. You know, that was my dream. And thankfully it didn't happen that way, because I probably wouldn't be alive today. But, you know, that was kind of gives you a glimpse of what I was like. That was me. And I did straighten up later on as a late teenager.
You ever tried to go to California? Like when you were a kid, try to like, I'm going or anything like that?
Yeah, pretty much. That was my plan. Yeah. I had it all mapped out. And I was like, yeah, man, Venice Beach, I would keep up with, at the time there was no internet, you know, so
yeah.
I would keep up with various magazines, Thrasher, of course, and then some different surfer stuff. But, you know, I liked the idea of surfing, but at the time I've never surfed in my life. I don't even live near a beach, but, you know, it kind of went hand in hand. I knew if I just had some time in the water, I'd be good at it.
Sure.
And, so I kind of would keep up with it, and I noticed that Venice Beach was, you know, they talk about, they had the skate parks there on the beach, and they every now and then the surf would be good. They'd have competitions sometimes in Santa Monica and out that Malibu, that whole area. And then, of course, in Australia, you know, everybody knows surfing there is off the chain. And then I was like, well, I discovered they were going to have a surf competition in Florida, and I never even considered Florida. And there was they called it Melbourne Beach, which is down around like Cocoa. And I was like, Melbourne, you know, if the California don't work out, I'll just go there. Melbourne's got to be cool, because there's a big city in Australia called Melbourne.
Right.
So that was my plan. So I was just an idiot. You know, I don't know what else to say. And
well, you're a kid. We are all kids, you know.
I know. Yeah, but this I'm just trying to let everybody know what I was like as a kid, and
how the
changed my life. I grew up, like I said, I had a little punk rock band. And
what was the name of the band?
Witch Doctor.
Witch Doctor, yeah. Do you have t-shirts or like a logo?
You know, I think we had a logo, but it kind of changed every week. But t-shirts down, you know. But I left it, and the other guys kept it going, and they actually started kind of pretty good. And so much a few years later, they invited me to come to, they had a big concert, one of these arenas here in Atlanta.
What? Awesome.
They had a tribute to me in their little tape, you know, and it's pretty cool. It was an honor, you know.
So fun. You know,
I know. And I had a guy recently come back into my life. He was used to be my best buddy named Marshall. And we were all into chasing girls. And believe it or not, I did play football. I just didn't go to practice very often. And I actually wanted to get kicked off the team. But you know,
you're admitting to a lot of wrongdoing here. You don't have to tell anyone any of these things.
But, you know, I had a lot of friends in the crowds. Okay. So, yeah. But my buddy Marshall later in life, he went missing and I didn't know what happened to him. And finally he came back around just a couple years ago and on Facebook, he's calling me and he was in jail for a long time. He actually shot somebody. And I don't know what happened. But anyways, he told me, he's like, man, I was wondering what happened to you, man. He said, I just knew you were going to be like out in Los Angeles, you know, surrounded by blonde chicks, snorting cocaine off the end of your guitar. I was like, I'm thinking, wow, man, I ain't talked to this guy in, you know, man, 25 years, maybe more. And that's the image I left with him. That's what he thought I was going to be doing with my life. And it kind of made me smile thinking about it, but I was like, no, dude, it didn't work out that way. Probably a good reason it didn't work out that way.
And so I, you know, changed.
You know, that's a good question. I guess my mother started dating a gentleman and they became my stepdad and they got married when I turned 18 and he was a former military and fireman, things like that. And we started getting into doing some jogging and he got me into doing some fitness type stuff, and which I was always fit, but I never like pursued it that way. It just came because of what I was into. So we got into running a lot and then, you know, just next thing you know, I'm getting my hair cut and, just kind of started taking a different path. I cleaned up. What else to say? I started working a lot. I had a job in construction and met a girl. She's my wife. She's my wife today. And
wow, good for you.
I know we've been together a long time. So I just had a lot of growing up.
I have no idea how old you are. So could have been yesterday. I don't know.
I'm not the spring chicken. But
we
had kids early. Yeah, I had two sons, and they're both older now. And yeah, I just had a lot of growing up to do early on. So all that music stuff, all my big dreams, they kind of just went to crap. And but I've always played music. I stayed with it. Just didn't do a lot of it in my 20s. I kind of got away from it. And then later on, I started playing acoustic gigs, single solo type things, restaurants, fairs, stuff like that. Do a classic rock or country music, a lot of Johnny Cash type stuff. I would do covers of, and I stayed busy. I was making pretty good money every weekend doing it by myself. I got to where it was not even fun anymore. So I guess I was, you know, doing it right.
That's when you know it's a business.
Exactly.
Did you have a gig every night of the week at different restaurants around town? What was your regular like schedule for a while?
For the busiest I got, I was doing it Friday night, Saturday night, sometimes Wednesday nights. And yeah. I was, you know, doing it for tips. So I didn't do it every night, but it was sometimes, well, there was some weeks it might have been more often than three nights a week. If there was a fair, depending on what time of year it was, I would play, you know, wherever I could, you know. And I wanted to start a Johnny Cash tribute cover band, like the Get Up and All, man. This guy with the stand-up bass and the, you know, the 50s era clothing, you know. That was what I tried to put that together. But I realized as I was older that it's hard to do. You know, just trying to find guys that have the time to dedicate to this and to put a band together, it just didn't work out. But I really think it would be a cool thing, you know, booking weddings and doing the whole Jet tribute, looking the part. You know, it'd be really cool.
Yeah, totally.
You know? Anyways, I kind of got away from that. I got busy with life, and I discovered acting along the way.
Yeah, did you like get into it because somebody saw you performing music and said, "Hey, you should be an actor," or did you take a class somewhere, or both?
No. People that had said that to me, they thought I, you know, was attractive. You know, for modeling stuff when I was younger. I should be a model. Maybe I should, you know, I look like I should be on TV, and I'd always laugh at all. I'm like, whatever, man, you know, and didn't think about it. You know, just whatever, you know, it was a compliment. Thank you. Is what I would say. But, later on one of my sons, when he was younger, he had an interest in acting. He wanted to check it out, and he was a really handsome kid. So I was like, all right. So we went and got him a little agent and got him some photos and modeling shots, headshots, stuff like that. And he started doing background work. And as a minor, somebody has to go with him, one of your parents. And so we would do it occasionally. I'd go. And on a particular night, it was a young director that was doing a small project. And we were there. And all of his background talent did not show up because it was a rainy night. He had a bad location. Nobody could find it. He asked me and my wife if we would help fill in this little bar scene as a extra. I'm like, oh, sure, whatever, man. We're just hanging out. So didn't know nothing about it. One of the other ladies said, just mouth to me like we're talking, you know, just recite the months of the year like we're having a conversation, but don't actually say anything, you know, so – I was like, okay, so we did that. And anyways, afterwards, the director, he asked me if I ever done any acting. And I was like, nah, man. He says, well, you should. You have an important look. And I was like, okay, well, thank you. I didn't know what to say to that. So I just kind of, I let that kind of simmer for a while. My son, he kind of just bailed from acting. He didn't like it. He had a few bad auditions. And he saw it as very difficult. It's not as easy as it seems on the surface.
Sure.
And he got tired of sports in high school. He just didn't have time. So anyways, along the way, I met a guy. I looked at a property for him that he was thinking about buying. And because of my business, you know, we do waterproofing, foundation repairs. We were talking about this property, and somehow he mentioned that he was from Los Angeles and he was an actor. And so I started asking questions, you know, and he could tell I was interested. And he used to train at the Beverly Hills Playhouse, which is a well-known place out there. A lot of the A-listers have trained there at some point in their lives. And so I thought that was kind of cool. And he invited me to come to his, he had a little acting class that he did locally, and he invited me to come. So I went. And
what was his name again?
Clayton Bailey. That's his name. So, very nice dude. I'm not sure how he wound up in Georgia, but yeah, he was a great actor.
How does anyone end up in Georgia?
I don't know, man. I just happened to be born here.
Yeah, you're lucky. You're lucky. That's how you get there the first time. That's the best way.
I'll tell you what. I never looked back. I just fell in love with it. It's so challenging, and I had to overcome, you know, putting on my poker face all the time and showing emotion, you know, and acting, but coming from an honest place. And it's hard. It's just not easy. And I like that. But I do like doing the visual arts and making an audience, you know, feel something from your performance, whatever that may be, some sort of an emotion. And music does the same thing as a performer. But acting is so much more to it. It's hard. There's so many different. It's like just, music is deep for me. I love it. I love all genres. And I just love a good performance. I don't care what it is. Some of the best performances I've ever had was at a senior center with a bunch of old dudes jamming out, playing, you know, old George Jones type stuff. I mean, just, man, I talking about it, I start smiling. I can't wait to go back and see them guys again.
Yeah.
And I'm going, this COVID thing is over, just because that's how much I like it. But acting is similar But it's so hard. It's so difficult because not just the acting, it's doing it over and over again for different takes, different angles of the camera. Maybe there's a lot of, you know, maybe in this independent world, an airplane happened to be flying over on your best take. You know, you're like, oh, let's do it again. You know, so, I mean, yeah. This stuff, like, there's so many different elements to it. But when you watch the process of it and how it comes together with a shooting schedule, I feel sorry for the editing guys because I know they go through a lot. But the final product is just like, wow. You know, so now when I watch a movie or a show, since I've became an actor, it's just I look at everything different. You know, it's not the same at all.
Yeah, totally. Totally. When we go to movies, we always watch all the way through to the end, like to all of the names, and we try to like read a few of them out loud because it's like, look at all these people. And I love, there's a few movies where like at the very end, they'll say how many people worked on it. And you're like, yeah, 17,000 people. That's right. You know, like I get so excited about that. My favorite thing is like seeing all, just watching it being made, how it works, like how different it is from like what happens when you're shooting to like how it gets edited together and everything. Oh man, that's so cool. Like just the whole process of that. You know, I wanted to ask you a question. You do your music like in a live performance scenario. Why didn't you do you? But you got into film, and I see that you got into film not because you were like looking for film, but because film was looking for you. But like, you know, have you ever thought about doing like theater or you know something like an improv class or something like that? Because like you're a live performance guy. You're like talking about how you'd love to. You can't wait to go back and you know play guitar at the senior center. It's like, hey man, bring your improv troupe, and they love it as well. You know, why aren't you on stage as well doing performances in that way?
Well, I've never done theater, and I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to do a traveling play. Well, and it was random and it was paid. They were going to tour the Southeast and up the East Coast and all this stuff. And I didn't know that when I said, okay, it kind of came at me indirectly from somebody through Facebook and somebody had dropped out. This guy thought I was perfect. And I didn't realize it was that big of a deal. I thought it was just, you know, we're going to do this play one time and that's it. No, it was like 3 or 4 nights a week. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And then I told him yes. And then the next day I was like, I've got to tell this guy, I cannot commit to this. There's no way. I had too much going on. So I did. I told him, I said, look, I'm sorry, but it's better I tell you this, the sooner the better, because I know you're depending on me to be there and I'm going to let you down. I'm going to tell you now. So it's better that we just don't do this. So it pissed him off, but you know, he, I think he appreciated that I was so honest so early.
To have somebody drop out, but that doesn't mean they hate you personally. You know what I mean? They're just like, oh, now I have more work to do, but it's not like you. So don't worry.
I dropped out after 12 hours of saying, okay. So it wasn't, you know, I didn't like commit and go practice and then bail after, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? So
totally. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about theater is it's, I guess it's the part of film you don't like, which is the repeating. Like you have to do it. You go and rehearse and you do it over and over and over and over and over. And then you get an audience and then you do it over and over and over and over and over and over and over. But it's always the same thing. And it's always the same thing. So like, I can see if that's not your deal, might not be great.
Not my deal. It's just because I do run a business as well.
Yeah.
And actor, you know, it's just, I was like, man, there's no way I can commit to, you know, traveling the East Coast for months and doing a traveling play. I just don't see that happening. There's no way.
Yeah. The touring aspect when you have a family and a business is not really great. But like if you had one in town, I don't know what the Atlanta theater scene is like. I know the Atlanta film scene is thriving, but I don't know if the Atlanta theater scene is thriving. However, the Atlanta improv scene is thriving. I do know that, just so you're aware.
Well, you know what? It's funny you say that, because I have a strong interest in comedy, especially in film or television. I enjoy it. I've done it a couple of times. And here's one thing. I want to tell you this story. This happened to me a few years ago. I got cast in a pilot. This was through, it was a competition for the Sony PlayStation Network. I don't even know if they still even have that network, but they did it one time. They were like a streaming network through Sony PlayStation. So it was for independent up and coming filmmakers. Everybody, you know, created a pilot for a show. And I got cast as one of the characters in this pilot. And my part was small. I was the comedy relief, believe it or not, of the episode. I couldn't believe it. I didn't see the whole script. I didn't know what the episode was about, but all I knew about was my character and my scene. And I was the golf car salesman. So I was like, all right. And this golf car salesman, his job is to sell the main guy a golf cart. He breaks out every sales technique known to man, but you don't know he's selling a golf cart until the closing of the scene. So that's kind of what makes it funny, you know, where it's shot really close and tight. Well, anyways, I auditioned through a local casting director, and I got the part and all that. And they wanted me to really play it up in person. And I tell you, you know, when I was in that room, it was probably, this was at actually a golf cart place. And there's a town here called Peachtree City where everybody drives golf carts. So they actually have a golf cart dealership. So anyway, we're inside this place and shooting this scene. And, you know, I did my thing, and the room was full of about 50 plus people with all the different characters, the team, production team, everybody. And everybody's watching me, and they couldn't get through. We did it a few times, and everybody in the room started dying laughing, you know? And I was like, man, this is awesome. You know, I was so happy that they were happy that what I was giving them. And it was not a dark, it was actually a funny thing. You know, most of the time I play these, you know, these killers and stuff, man. So it was nice to do something that made people happy. You know, so I really enjoyed it a lot. And they liked it so much that they put me in there. And this young girl, she actually won the competition. And the goal, the win from Sony PlayStation, was to get a season on Sony PlayStation Network with your series.
Great.
And she won. So, and then I was like, well, that's great. You know, my part was a one-part wonder. I'm the comic relief. That was it.
Sure.
Well, a couple of months later, one of the producers for the show, she gives me a call and says that they liked me so much, they were going to write me in as a main character. I was going to be married to one of the other females that was a main character on the show. So I was like, man, that's like a dream come true. Really? Okay. Awesome. Well, anybody that's an actor knows that, you know, talk is cheap. So it never even came together. It fell apart. And even the young girl, the director who won it, does not know what happened, but they did not shoot the series. They didn't even go through with it. It all just was a big, I think Sony PlayStation Network just tanked the whole thing after the fact.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so it never even came together. It just ended. And I've had a few other cool things happen in my career so far that have, you know, seemed very promising, but they didn't quite make it. You know, it's just the way it is. And
yeah, there's a lot of that.
But that was my taste of comedy, and I liked it a lot. I'm not a funny guy, and people that hang around me don't just die laughing. You know, I had a friend like that, and most of your comics are that they're just funny people. I have to like go out on a limb and kind of be over the top, you know, almost Jim Carrey style, but not quite.
Sure.
To for me to be expressive, because my comedy comes from expressiveness. Sure. Not just saying stuff. Well, you have to see me do it.
Yeah.
So I've always had interest in doing it. And I had looked at a place here locally called Dad's Garage. You probably heard of it. And some classes, but yeah, I just haven't done it yet. Not for the comedy stuff. I'm not really looking to be a stand-up comic, but I don't think they do.
I mean, maybe they do stand-up comedy, but they're definitely an improv place. Improv is like what, if you don't like doing plays more over and over, this is what you're into, because improv is making it up on the spot. And even though that might sound super scary right now, in a couple of classes, your brain will switch and you'll be able to do it. Like, it's just kind of like a innate ability that you had when you were a kid. And, you know, we don't have it now because, you know, being an adult is harder than being a kid. But you can open up the doors to the imagination and then there it is. And then you can play and do different kinds of things. And the ideas are flowing, sort of free flowing in your brain. And it helps. You know, to do these kinds of scenes. It's. I also really like improv for like therapy, because you can go do scenes and like work through stuff with your scene partners that like maybe you can't work out in your real life. You know, there's somebody you really like. If you have this argument, it's not going to go well, but you can have the argument in your improv class and see how it goes. Maybe it goes totally different with your improv person, and you get out sort of what you need, and then, you know, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, I did take an improv class once at it was a 4 or 6 week, you know, kind of short class type thing. Mm-hmm. And we did some goofy stuff like that. We would just,
yeah,
basically have these exercises with a scene partner. And I did enjoy it. It was awkward at first,
yeah,
but, I did enjoy it, but I need to get back into it, because I do want to work on my comp. That my goal as an actor, I plan to get some goofy headshots taken soon and try to start targeting some of this comic stuff. But be good at it, you know, not just make them think I'm good at it.
I want to see these like headshots with like you in like a bit, in a purple sweater with like balloons, or like it's you and like a banana or like a rubber chicken.
That'd be hilarious.
Man, now I want to get those headshots for myself. Forget it. Don't do it. It's my idea. I'm taking it. No.
Well, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, like this, you know, really destroy your hair and, you know, just look cross-eyed at the camera. I don't know, something funny.
You know, there's this, if you look online, there's this, if you look up Melissa McCarthy headshot, there's like a headshots that she did after she took classes at Groundlings, which was like her comedy theater. And, and they're like crazy. She's wearing like these big glasses and like a curly wig and making like a crazy face. And I was like, what a silly headshot. You don't have to have, just so you know, because I do mostly comedy, but I also have headshots. You don't have to have funny headshots to do comedy. You can have old headshots. I mean, I don't think there's any way that you're going to take headshots where they're not like, who's this smoldering hunk? Like, I'm sorry, but you're not getting around that. Like, there's no way. So just lean into it. And then, you know, you could dress like super smooth. And then like, okay, so here's the key. So we're talking about like, what's the thing about comedy? There's two things. One, it's rhythm. And if you can figure out what the rhythm of the comedy is, you can always be funny. And then the other is contrast. So like, the idea of comedy is essentially that something's out of place, and that thing that's out of place doesn't realize it's out of place and will never realize it's out of place. So like that guy who was like overly selling the golf cart, and then the reveal that he's selling golf carts, it's likely both that what he was saying was, you know, referencing something different, and or that, you know, he was overly excited about something And then it turned out that what he's overly excited about is golf carts, which is like, why are you that excited about a golf cart, right? So the contrast there is like how excited he is versus like what he's excited about. So that's that, just thinking about like your comedy headshots, it'd be like your totally normal outfit, but like you have a huge red bow tie. Like everything's fine. You're still looking smooth. Everything's awesome. Just one tiny different thing. You're wearing a Michael Jackson glove for some reason. Like that's it. Like just like everything's fine. You're totally right. You're wearing a very nice suit, except for that Michael Jackson glove.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh man.
Michael Jackson. Oh man, what are you doing?
And they're like, did you see the guy that you'd get auditions just from that alone, honestly. Because in my life, if I've learned anything, it's like you gotta stick out because there's 1,000 different people who are attractive. But like if you're like, well, look at this weird thing, we love it. They might make fun of you, but they're calling you in, so who cares?
I think I'm gonna do that. That's a great idea. That's
That being said, if it backfires fun. And your agent's like, who gave you this advice? It wasn't me.
Oh, yeah. Well, see how it goes. I'm going to do it because I really want to go that direction. I enjoy the whole, you know, the being the guy that's attractive, but is a sicko. You know, that's kind of like my go-to character.
How did that start? What was your first role as a terrible murderer?
Well, how does one become a murderer? Well,
tell me about your career as a murderer.
Well, it started off as just playing the hard detective guy. You know, got cast in that kind of stuff a lot. And then that turned into the bad cop guy, mm-hmm. to doing, you know, wrongful stuff to people that didn't deserve it. And then it turned into being just kind of the husband that is an asshole, you know, one of those types. And then somehow it bloomed into killing people. I don't know. It just happened.
Officer, I have no idea how this happened. I was just a jerky husband. I don't know how he got here.
Hello, Ed.
Hey, so funny. That's so funny. So were you like Dexter-like murderer? Were you like serial killer in this movie? Or was it like he's like a nice mailman. Oh my God, he murdered everyone. What kind of movie was it?
More serial killer type, you know, mm-hmm. you know, the guy that you wouldn't expect it, but you kind of, something's off, you know,
yeah,
that kind of, and if I'm not playing that, I'm usually playing some sort of a bad guy. It's never a good guy, you know, it's never like I don't really do good dramas where everything's kind of normal, or maybe it's, you get to play the hero, that kind of stuff. I wish I was, but I would enjoy it. I would like to do a normal drama, maybe a love story or something that ends in a good way. Yeah, that'd be great. But I just, that's not how casting sees me these days. So I'm looking to change that. I'd like to go a little crazy, man, like a little goofy stuff and play off that, what you said earlier, where, you know, people look at you and they assume you're this way. And then you start talking, you sound like Mickey Mouse. I mean, like, what? So, what? I mean, whatever. Some kind of contrast, like you're saying. I watched a movie the other day, Adam Sandler. I think it's called Grown Ups. Uh-huh. And the ladies are at the pool. Remember, they're at the pool, and they're all worried about taking their bikini off. And they see this one dude across the pool. He's all steroided up, and he's all looking good. And he comes over to them, and then he starts talking, and he's like, hey, ladies, I'm from Saskatoon. You know, it's all like that. They start dying laughing. They're like, every part of him is on steroids, but his voice. And it's just funny because it was like what you said, just a big contrast. So
yeah,
I
want to
figure. I got to figure how to play on that. And I would rather lift people up if I had a choice in making people feel an emotion, make them laugh or make them feel good rather than make them scared or mad at me, you know, because that's what I usually do. I mean,
I feel like you're on the right path. You can't get weirder roles than serial killer. So like next stop comedy, like there isn't, you know what I mean? Like there's nowhere else to go. They're like, well, so that was weird. How do we get weirder? And they're like, okay, so what if, you know what I mean? Like, so, and also the essence of comedy characters are the worst people in the world. Like all characters who are comedy characters, not all. Okay. Most comedy characters are terrible human beings. They're not going to learn lessons. They are going to continue to make the same mistakes over and over and over because it serves the situation, right? If they learned lessons, then it wouldn't be fun for us to watch that thing. We need to expect that they're constantly going to do the same things over and over. You know, like certain comedy characters that come back all the time, like even ones like Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean doesn't say anything, but he's got a serious vibe going on. And it's the same vibe in every single movie or television show. Like, he's kind of bumbling. He's not sure. He's constantly getting lost and, like, getting in trouble. But, like, he didn't mean to do the thing, but turns out he did the thing. You know, so there's a lot of that, and it just keeps happening over and over. Does he ever learn his lesson? And in the end, no. Everything ends up fine for him because he needs to live so they can do more movies. But it's not that he's going to learn. And, like, at the end, he's not like, you know what I should have done is actually I should have put it in my pocket instead of hold the ticket in the air where I had to chase after it for the whole movie. Like, you know what I mean? They're not going to learn. Yeah. So, yeah, serial killer seems like a crowd, not so much learning lessons. So, there we go. Comedy, next up.
Well, hey, you know, that's good. I guess I'm on the right track. So
plus you always need creepers in comedies because like think about like did you see the movie Game Night? It's a movie with like Jason Bateman and he and his wife are in love and they love playing games, but they have this weird creepy cop neighbor or I guess he's maybe a security guard he's played by this guy Jesse Plemons and he's super weird and creepy, but he wants to be their friend so badly. So there's this like joke about like he'll be like, hey, what are you guys doing tonight? And they're like, oh, my God. Oh, were you standing there the whole time? And they're like, yeah. Are you guys having a game night? And they're like, no. No one's coming over. You should not come over. He's like, really? I liked that time that I came over. Can I just come over again? And they're like, we're gonna turn in early. And then all their friends, like, jump in the back window. They're like, why do we have to jump in? They're like, he can't know that we are having this game night. So, like, he's creepy and weird, but he serves as a comedy purpose in the movie by, like, being weird and creepy. And then, you know, he loves them. He wants to be there. Every time he sees them, what are you guys doing? Do you want to hang out? Do you want to come over? I have pizza. They're like it's just, you know, so, you know, weird dudes like that make me think of creepy's fine as long as it's got a flip in a certain way that's not like that creepy, you know?
Yeah, there's a line for sure. Well, I'm going to try. That's my goal. Come my next big move as an actor. I'm trying to see what happens. I'm going to play around with that and. Because I've done some funny commercials too, and I just have a good time, you know, doing that stuff. And, you know, it's just, I'd rather make people laugh than, you know.
So,
yeah, to make them.
When you first started doing film and stuff like that, like, you know, you started through, you know, you'd found an agent or something for your son, so he was doing work. How did you get it figured out for yourself? Did like an agent just come to you? Were you like, did you like apply to a bunch of places? Have you been with the same agent for a while? How's it work?
I continue to take acting classes weekly for a little over two years straight, which, you know, I mean, that's in the grand scheme of things, it's not that big a deal, but I was doing workshops. I was trying to get better at acting because I wasn't really that good at it. It was a stretch for me to really for some reason it was hard, and that's why I liked it. You know, so I trained a lot. But to answer your question, I got cast in a couple little films, you know, here and there. I played a mean dad, and then that was my first role. And the same thing, the next one, I think the next, my second project was the same similar type of thing. It was based in the 50s. This director was cool. He had like all this wardrobe and props that were all from, I mean, period correct from the 50s, man. It was amazing. So anyways, I played the mean dad in that one too. And so eventually I decided to go out. I got some, you know, of course, professional headshots done. And when I started looking for an agent, I didn't really have much on my resume. The first agent I had was there was a local guy. I won't say his name. He's not really known in the he's not known in the industry as a real agent. And it was kind of one of them guys that you basically, he hires you, and but you got to take his acting class and, you know, stuff like that. Mm. I had headshots done from his guy, which, you know, it wasn't like it was a big deal. It cost me like, I think $100 or something for my headshots. And then the class was like $70. It wasn't like it was a game changer payment or nothing, but I learned that he was not a legitimate agent. He was just he liked to take advantage, but people that were just, especially children, you know, parents that didn't really know what was going on, would get involved, and he would just book them background work. That was his thing. Mm. So I wasn't with him but a month, you know, and when I found out the word on him was a bunch of BS. So I just left it alone. He had me on his website. I'm like, whatever, man. And I just went on and got me another agent. I went and shopped a couple, but I didn't really shop. The first one I went to was an agency here in Atlanta. She also has an office in Los Angeles. She's well respected. She's been around a long time. And they took me, even with very little experience. Yeah, they thought I had a good look. They thought I could play some good parts. And I was flattered. I said, okay, thank you. And so didn't see a lot of auditions at first, but the ones they were sending were a little too big for me at the time. I didn't even have my technical recording stuff really very well. I look at some of my auditions from back then. It's hilarious from where they are, not just from the performance, but just the technical aspect, like the lighting, the backdrop. I mean, all that stuff. I mean, it's just comical looking back at it now. But during this time, I had the audition for the co-pilot in American Made that's talking to Tom Cruise, for God's sakes. So it's cool to think I got that, got the audition. I mean, I didn't get the part, obviously, but I was like, man, geez. And there was a couple of others that came through that were a little too much, you know. I mean, I didn't see a lot of auditions. They were far and few between, but when they did come, they were substantial. I mean, one was for Stranger Things in the first season. It was a huge, a lot of words. It wasn't no one liner, no day player. It was a big one, you know? And, so eventually, essentially what I did, I went back to my agent and I told her, I said, you know, unfortunately I'm going to stop for now. Cause I told her, I said, I don't feel like I'm very good at this. And I don't want to develop a bad name among the casting directors this early in the game, especially ones that are casting for stuff like this. So she was shocked. She was like, wow, really? I said, yeah. I just, maybe, you know, maybe in the future, maybe if you don't mind, I may want to see about coming back. She said, okay. You know, she understood, but she didn't really like it. She didn't agree with it. But so I left her. I wasn't with her with maybe not quite a year, maybe 8 months. And so I went to another agency after that, and I went and met with her. She called me in for a meeting, and I met with her, and she thought I sounded way too country. I had a redneck accent that had to go. she said that I didn't have enough experience and with my accent wasn't going to get anywhere. She's very rude, very mean. And I was like, well, okay. Then she's like, well, you know, we talked for a while and I just kind of just talk like we're talking now. And then she's like, well, you know, but you do have a good look. And then she's like, well, I don't know that accent. I don't know. Maybe we'll get you some stuff that you don't have to talk. I was like, and I looked at her and I said, you know, I said, look, I said, ma'am, you don't have to take me. It's okay. You're not going to hurt my feelings, okay? And then she said, well, I do want to take you on. I'm like, are you sure? Like, you sure you want to? And so I got with her, and that was a big mistake. She was just a bitch all the time. I couldn't ask her a question without getting a smart-ass answer. And it was disheartening. And it made when I would audition, I'd scared to send it in. Because if I had something to say, I sounded too much like a redneck, you know? So it just really, it was a bad experience. I mean, it was terrible. And some people around town, they know her and they love her. They think she's a great agent, but not for me. Worst I've ever had. And so I was with her for a year and I told her I was leaving. And she was basically like, don't let the door hit you in the butt. She didn't care. So I left her and I went to another agency. And these guys, I submitted online. They called me in for a meeting and I've been with them now for about 3 years. And they're great guys. These guys are down to earth. They're very good hearted. They care about me. They want to build me up. They want me to succeed. They know what's coming. I'm surprised they haven't dropped me because I haven't booked a lot with them, to be honest with you. They've gotten me some great auditions. I've had some huge callbacks that I should have gotten, but if for some reason I did not. And, you know, they've seen that. So they believe in me. So I've stayed with them. You know, and I thought about changing agencies, maybe coming up this year, but I'm not, you know, I don't know. Right now is a tough time because of the virus thing, the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of auditions out anymore, but I routinely was seeing on a regular, at least one or two a week, which is a lot for a lot of actors in Atlanta. They don't see that many. So yeah. I'm blessed that I'm in auditions and my agents are working. So I can't complain about them. I feel like I'm letting them down. You know, I want to make them money, and I feel like I'm not doing my job. Now, I book work on my own, and so when I get it from my agent, it's a little different. But to answer your question, I didn't really shop around. I did my research on which agencies I thought would be a good fit before I even talked to anybody. So I didn't just submit to, like, 10 different agencies. You know what? Early on, I did get rejected from one agency locally, and here's what happened. This is early on, like when I first was looking for an agent, because one of my acting classmates had the same agent. And so I submitted to her. She sent me a script, a scene, and wanted me to read it like a monologue type thing. And I did. I sent it in, followed exactly to a T what it said to do. But it said, make sure your phone camera is horizontal, not vertical. And I did shoot it that way, but I didn't realize that my phone had a setting on it that where it didn't rotate. And so when I loaded it up, I had the kind of software, it looked right. But when you put it into a file format to send, it came out vertical. So she's like, you can't follow instructions. So therefore I'm not taking you. I was like, are you serious? You know, I said, well, you're probably doing me a favor. So I learned from that point that it's imperative, every little note. So whenever I get a breakdown through my agent or anybody, I read it 10 times because everybody's different. Nobody's on the same page of what they want, how they want the file labeled, how they want it shot, what kind of framing. I mean, where they want the slate at. I mean, all that stuff everybody is different. So you have to really pay attention. And if some casting directors won't even watch it, if something is out of place. And I've had a casting director one time tell me I did something wrong when I did follow the instructions. She forgot what she had put in the instructions herself. So you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
But that's how I got going. And I do have an agent that I've been with for 3 years, like I said a little while ago. They're great guys, and I think they're awesome, and I hope that I make them a lot of money one day.
I'm pretty sure as long as you're, you know, still putting yourself out there and trying to get stuff going, it'll work itself out. And they're happy to have you. They're happy to represent you. If it's been 3 years and things have been going well, then, hey, don't fight it, right?
Yeah, I can't fight it. I wish I had some different auditions for other projects that I don't seem to see. Like, I've noticed from the three agencies I've been with, it's funny, you'll see a trend. Certain casting directors are that cast for certain things. They seem to have relationships with different agencies, you know? So
yeah,
where like, the agent I have now, I've seen a lot of auditions for one particular show and a lot of stuff from one particular casting director. And, he cast for a lot of stuff for Tyler Perry. And the big callback I had one time, that was for, Undercover Brother 2, was a big role that I had a callback, but the director that came through him. So he tends to call me in quite a bit, but he has a good relationship with my agents, you know? So, But there's other shows that are being shot here in town that I've never seen an audition for ever. And I know that I should be getting those.
Do you know who's casting them?
That is some things that I try to look up, and then I try to figure out. I've done that in the past where I've tried to figure out what agencies tend to work with, who's doing the casting of certain shows. There was a couple of shows I really wanted to be on, and one of them I know is not going anymore. It's the show called Sun Records. I think they had one or two seasons. I thought that would have been awesome to be on that somehow in some kind of way, just whatever, because of my passion for music and Johnny Cash.
Yeah,
totally. And then also Dallas, the remake.
That would have been cool. Yeah, Dallas, the remake is made in Georgia. Of course it is. Everything's made in Georgia now. They also make a lot of, speaking of, most of the Georgia things that I'm watching are like animated. So there's like that going on. There's got to be some like voiceover work for you. This voice that you have has to be, good for voiceovers. It sounds nice. You have a nice voice.
Well, thank you. I haven't really tried to do any voiceover work.
Think of all the trucks you could sell.
Yeah, you know, I'd be a good Ford truck salesman.
You really buy Ford truck. Oh my God. I'd buy three of them. I'd be like, it seems like it's a good car from what he said. And they're like, what? He said, buy Ford trucks. I'm like, guys, I'm just saying. He makes a strong point. What?
Yeah, buy them. You need this truck. Yeah. I have done a few voice auditions for Bojangles Chicken.
Chicken?
Yeah, Bojangles, the fast food chicken joint. You know, I don't know if they have.
I'm very excited to hear about it.
Well, they're famous for like the Louisiana recipe, very good chicken establishment if you're ever in the South. But they wanted somebody with a Southern accent, and I've actually auditioned more than once. They do a lot of, radio stuff, commercials where they're looking for somebody that has a particular sound. But evidently, I still haven't booked it. I don't know what the hell they're looking for. So,
well, they keep listening to it, and they're like really enjoying it. And then they're like, "Do you guys feel like this chicken is a little too sexy? Yeah, we can't have this. This is not a thing. Get a woman. She needs to be middle aged. For the love of God, I can't do this. Somebody give me some chicken." I'm telling you, as soon as their ad agency rethinks the way to sell chicken, they'll call you right away. You'll be the first one in. They'll be like, is it hot in here? Buy some chicken. You're like, whoa, okay. Oh, yeah. No, these are all fun. I'd like that. Also, you know, think of how fun and funny you probably have to be to do a chicken commercial. I can't imagine it's like a very serious, like, it's imperative for all Americans to eat some chicken. And if you're going to do it, you might as well accomplish it at Bojangles Chicken. Like, that seems, you know.
Well, you know, good old Southern fried chicken. good stuff.
Good stuff. So, man.
good stuff.
I can't imagine that. I'm surprised they have commercials. It sells itself. I don't think I've ever actually, you know what? You're right. I've definitely heard like Popeyes commercials. And I don't know why they don't have to sell that, right? People are breaking down the door trying to get a sandwich at that place. They do not have to advertise.
I know, it's self-selling. Yeah, what right? do you do?
Oh, well, my God, maybe. You're funny. I'm so excited about the idea, like, of you to do comedy. Oh, other thing I was going to say is maybe improv isn't the scene because who knows what the vibe is, but maybe find, like, a sketch comedy thing because sketch comedy, you'll be writing. Either you're writing and then performing or sometimes other people are writing and you're performing, but they're, like, shorter comedy scenes and it'd be easier for you to get involved in stuff. And then, so then the sketch comedy classes will lead you to the people who are making the comedy movies independently. And then the independent comedy movies will lead you to the larger comedy movies because then those people are making different kinds of movies or blah, blah, blah. And then somebody sees you at Austin Film Festival and this hilarious comedy. And they're like, who is that amazing vampire? I want him in my movie.
Well, you know, hey, I appreciate that. I never even thought about it that way. I didn't even, be honest with you, I'm not really was too sure what sketch comedy really meant. So,
oh, it's just Saturday Night Live. What you see on Saturday Night Live, they're short scenes with jokes. Okay. That's it.
Well, that's me all day long.
Yeah.
I can definitely do that. That's, I'm going to look into that. I really am. That's the best advice I've had in a long time. So,
I mean, in these days, we're at home, right? I should probably not shill this on my own podcast, but I am teaching sketch comedy classes to do writing. But what you really need to do is, like, find people who are, like, doing something near you. Not near you, like, because I guess we can't be near each other because of COVID. But, like, find, like, if there's a local, maybe if Dad's Garage is doing sketch comedy classes on Zoom or something, mm-hmm. you can do that. And then you can get in and they'll teach you, like, how to do it. And then you connect with that crowd.
Yeah, I really am. Tomorrow, I'm going to look and see what's out there because I never even looked for that. I didn't know that. I mean, I know the improv is the thing, you know, obviously. And then Dad's Garage has a great, you know, there's other places too, but they do have a great, well-known locally, a lot of great Atlanta talent trains there. Mm-hmm. But the sketch comedy is, I would like to give that a go. That's kind of like exactly what I would like to do. Just doing small scenes that are funny, you know, because I'm not a natural comedy guy. I have to like be prepared. So
sure.
Like my buddy, and God rest his soul, he died about 10 years ago from cancer, but he was one of the funniest guys you've ever met in your life. I mean, the man, you could just, your wife could have just left you, your dog just died, and you got fired all on the same day, and talk to him in 5 minutes, you'd be laughing about it. He was that kind of guy, you know. He was just hilarious. And I always told him, man, I said, Dave, you've got to become a comedian, man. You're like a natural. And, but, you know, whatever, man, he got sick. But as a matter of fact, when he tried to be funny, it wasn't as funny. Weirdest thing. So, but for me, I almost had to like put forth a lot of effort, unless it just happened by accident, to be comedic. But I enjoy it. I like it. So.
You know, the Academy doesn't want you to know, but it turns out it's actually harder to do a comedy than a drama. And it's for real because it requires a lot of timing and a lot of different things that honestly are easier to accomplish on stage in front of people because it's an energy thing. And so anybody who can actually edit together a good comedy movie, anytime you see a good comedy movie, that editor's a genius because they have to put the rhythm of comedy into the editing. They have all that stuff to edit together, right? And yeah, maybe the scene that they built was written with the rhythm of the comedy, but when you're putting stuff together, it's not always exactly right or this second, that second. So they have to be able to feel it. And it's interesting. It's interesting to see. That being said, I want you to know that it's like learning a new language. Like, it'll take a second to figure it out, but as soon as you understand how the comedy works, you won't be able to watch another movie or television show that's a comedy without being able to literally call out the rhythm. Like, you'll be able to watch it and be like, and there we go. Like,
you know what? You're right, because I was watching, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with the show. It was very popular because of Charlie Sheen being, for a while there, all over the news. That show called Two and a Half Men?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with it? I'd never watched it. No, I never watched the show, nothing. I heard all about it. He was the highest paid actor to be on the show, or something like that. And he's all strung out on drugs, and you know his story, but. Yeah. I never watched it. I stumbled across it looking on TV here, and I started watching a couple of episodes, and I was watching the rhythm the way his character is, the way he would deliver his comedy with his, I guess it's his brother, friend or his brother he lives with. It's interesting to watch. It's very funny, but Charlie Sheen's not being over the top with his comedy. I don't know if it's just the writing or just because the rhythm, how he bounces is off the other guy is what makes it so funny. But there's something going on there that show is actually really good. I just, you know, put the Charlie Sheen's personal thing out of the picture, just looking at the show, you know.
Oh, well, I mean, honest to goodness, that show is made by Chuck Lorre, who's literally like a magic maker of sitcom. Like, if Chuck Lorre makes a show, watch it. It's a huge hit. Like, he wrote The Big Bang Theory, right? That's like the number one like comedy for years, for the last like 10 years or something like that. It's the hugest thing in the world. That guy knows how to do the rhythm. And I can almost guarantee you that it was not Charlie Sheen's amazing acting acumen that made him hilarious, but rather the perfect writing that went into those shows. Those shows are only funny because you are literally forced by the rhythm of comedy to laugh. There are even moments like legit. Okay, Two and a Half Men is essentially just a dick joke and a fart joke mixed with sad men, right? That's what the show is, right? It's hilarious because it's like, look at these two. They can't figure it out. That's the genius of all comedy, right? Is people are terrible. And like they're trying to, you'd think that this would be a show that would appeal to just, you know, dudes or like people who were in that same mindset. But oh no, my grandmother who used to yell at us for burping, not even near the dinner table, somewhere regular, like, I'm away from you, Nana, let me burp. You know, she'd yell at us from across the room. That's disgusting. Have some respect for yourself. But her favorite show was Two and a Half Men. Are you kidding me? So I believe that particular show transcends all comedy, because how did it pierce through the heart of this woman who would yell at us for everything, and yet she'd be like, ha, ha, this is a great show. We're like, what? It was her favorite, like legit, until her death. It was her favorite show. So crazy.
But you know what? You're absolutely right about, because I'm watching the show and I'm watching Charlie Sheen's character, and what you just said, the writing of that definitely has a lot to do with it, because I'm watching Charlie Sheen. I'm trying to figure it out. Why is this funny? And it's what you just said is exactly, it puts it in, you know, to layman's terms, it's a fart joke and a dick joke, you know, continuously. But the writing is amazing. I'm gonna look up all of Chuck's work and see what other stuff.
Oh, so much stuff. You'll be like surprised at the number of things. You'll be like, what? The same guy wrote this and this? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a TV writer, like, hardcore. Definitely somebody you'll see in all the comedies, for sure. For sure. In fact, you know, that's an interesting way to go about it as well. Like, watch comedies, see what you like. Once you know the style of comedy that you like to be in, then you can connect with people that also like that same kind. And then when those people are making their movies that are just like the ones that you like, you can be in those, right? Because comedy's like, comedy's not like drama. Drama's real life, but like, fake, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, terrible things happen and people fall in love or they don't, or everyone's happy or everyone's dead. Like, it's just drama. It's real life, right? But with comedy, there's shades and variants, and like, it's not always your kind of comedy. Like, there are certain kinds of comedy that appeal to a lot of people. Like, I'm not really a Big Bang Theory fan, right? I don't love that show. Do I respect Chuck Lorre? Clearly. But do I want to watch that show? No. I just watched it a couple times and I was like, eh, I don't care about the characters, right? Whatever, it's fine. Yeah. Do I love that it's the number one show? Yeah, great, good for them, right? Wonderful, not my cup of tea. I also don't love The Office, right? And everybody loves The Office, right? Everyone's like, oh my God, it's the best, I can't believe it. I didn't want to watch it. Like, it just wasn't my thing, right?
Yeah.
But that's just because it's not my style. So, you know, who knows what your style is? There is so much comedy out there, so much different kinds of stuff. Who knows? Maybe you'll fit right in with a certain crowd. You just need to find the right crowd.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what I'm going to look for. So hopefully I'll find it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to like turn this into some weird like me giving you advice or whatever. I apologize.
Great. It's perfect. I love it. And anybody else that hears this, hopefully that maybe is in the same boat, you know, that's interested in doing some more comedy rather than killing their wives.
You want to avoid that.
I want to avoid that. So this is a different direction. So trying to lift people up, not bring them down, I guess.
Totally. Listen, Eric, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you sharing your stories and chatting with me. And it's just been a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you had me on your show. And I appreciate all your great advice.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.